Well, good morning and welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday, the 12th of October. Very nice to have you with us. A delight. Of course, it is Yom Kippur, and Alan is not with us today, but he'll be back tomorrow. We do have a wonderful, wonderful panel before you and before us, and we will let me introduce them to you. Just a reminder, we have a lot to talk about. We are going to go in many, many different directions. I send out a list of topics every night, go through the news and send out things that as of 9:30, that I see, these would be interesting things to talk about. But when I came in to the studio just a moment ago, our panel had already come up with the topics they want to talk about. So I don't even really know what direction we're going in, but that's okay. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is director of the journalism program at the University at Albany. Good morning, Rosemary.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Excellent. Chris Churchill is a fantastic columnist for the Times Union, has had some amazing columns throughout his career, but fine work this week, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant and probably, I think, the newest member of our team, and we're more than a little tickled to have her on our program, and we thank you very much for being here once again.
Well, I'm so glad to be here on Rosemary's birthday.
Now, you...
No place I'd rather be.
You kiss up. I was going to mention that first.
What did you say on Facebook that you wanted for your birthday?
Yes, for my birthday, I would like the FBI to begin investigating Donald Trump on charges of treason. If you look at what's happening lately, he has both been colluding with the Russians, an enemy of the state, and he has been really thinly disguised inciting to overthrow the government.
So,
It's not as far-fetched an idea of some of the stuff he throws out.
How do we wrap that?
How do we wrap it?
Newspaper. For your present.
In the comics, yes. How do you wrap it?
Okay, all right, got it.
And I don't even need a conviction. Just the investigation alone would be enough.
Okay.
That would certainly make an interesting campaign a lot more interesting.
I think what we actually need is the voters to wrap that present for you. I really think that there needs to be, I think this is really what's on the ballot this time. It's such an unusual race. And this is really, democracy, small d democracy is on the ballot.
So can I ask?
Wow, that was good. She's right.
Yes. So, can I ask a question? Because it seemed like, look, we've been through, the American people have been through a lot over the last couple of weeks when it comes to this election. But we go to sort of the unhingedness that we saw with Elisa Machado and the early morning tweet storm that Donald Trump did. And then we see what happened yesterday, which was just this...
The unshackling.
This torrent of tweets against... the GOP, the Republican establishment, and especially Paul Ryan, who said a day before that he would no longer defend or be on the same stage with Donald Trump. Are we seeing the wheels come off the bus here, or is it just as Corey Lewandowski says, it's just Trump being Trump?
It's both.
I think it's their us against the world strategy, right? I mean, it's their strategy to, it's the scorched earth strategy of depressing the vote so much that only his core people show up.
Where did that come from, scorched earth? I first heard that on Sunday as like a campaign strategy. Where did that come from?
But there's a Wall Street Journal article that's come out that talks about his new effort is just going to be, you know, a scorched earth effort.
And that's the term they use.
This new strategy.
I mean,
that's a Civil War term.
Yeah, well, no, I understand. Yeah. I just don't know where it sort of. I just sort of where it came from in the campaign cycle. That's what I meant.
Yeah. I don't know.
I didn't know if they started it, if they said, like, we are going to start a scorched earth campaign or somebody labeled it as that. That was my question.
Right.
I think it's about making millennials hate Hillary, making, you know, everybody suspicious of Hillary to the point where the broad middle doesn't show up, and you just have, I think they want a base election essentially.
Well, and so what I have heard exactly from the Trump campaign is that they are going to what ultimately they're trying to do is to raise up, try to solidify the base as much as possible, and then depress the Hillary Clinton campaign as much as they possibly can, right?
Yes.
And put it as much baggage and damage on her as they possibly can. My question to you as a panel is, how do you do that without hurting yourself in the sense of completely, selling out any moral compass that you... Okay.
That's a big concern for Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's already gone.
No, but I mean even losing your base in the process because
you don't think so?
Okay, so let me rephrase the question. Do you think it's a legitimate campaign strategy? Do you think it could work in any way, shape, or form?
No, I don't think it's going to work. I think Hillary Clinton is going to win this. But he is going to do just incredible damage that we're going to take years to fix to the party and to the country afterward. He doesn't care about that.
Teresa?
Right. I think there are a range of forces at work here. And some of them have been brewing mm-hmm. for a long time. And in the past, you've had who's ever at the top of the ticket, either the candidate or the speaker, whoever, who held things together. And in particular, held the alt-right at bay in the Republican Party. But this time, you know, the range of forces, you've got the what I consider sort of the sad forces in that you have a group of very disaffected voters that they feel left out and left behind. And the right has been appealing to them for a long time. And you saw that in the frustration. I don't know if you saw the exchange with Pence and the woman at the rally yesterday. And I thought, you know, what are you going to do for that person who feels so disaffected and angry? And then you also have the separate set of forces within the Republican Party, the forces that drove Speaker Boehner out of the House mm-hmm. because they're so split. And that started a long time ago with Gingrich and his efforts to demand everybody be on the right and his contract for or on America, whatever you call it. You know, those seeds were sown a long time ago. And you saw it with the Tea Party and the splitting. And now you see it. Then there's been this dark side for a long time, the alt-right, the bright part folks. And I think what's happened is you have a candidate in Donald Trump who has no real core set of issues or values. He's essentially an empty vessel.
His value is Trump.
Right.
That's his issue.
His value is Trump. Yeah, That's his issue.
Yeah.
And so you take that and you have the Breitbart group, the Steve Bannons and the Roger Ailes, and those folks come in and essentially take over the campaign. And this is what you're left with. And it's chaos in the Republican Party. But it goes beyond that to exactly what Rosemary was talking about, because, you have these issues about attack on fundamental tenets of our democracy, whether it's on voting or on rule of law, lock her up, or it's on the media.
Libel. No more libel. Can't write that.
To really serious attacks.
Everything right now is rigged except for Trump. That's the message, basically. The election system is rigged. The media is rigged. The establishment Republicans are rigged. Everything you're supposed to distrust everything in society except for Trump.
Right. And I think it's building well past this election. I mean, I don't know that their end game. They don't stop after the election if they don't win, because what they're doing is building a strong base and for whatever they want to do after. And the Breitbart group, the Steve Bannons and those folks, those far right, you know, they've been at this for 20 years. They spent 20 years trying to discredit
the long game, they call it. Mm-hmm.
Discredit the Clintons, then delegitimize Obama, and now they're working to delegitimize, who will likely be the next president. And I think that's why voting is so critical. Millennials, others, people like, we hope Senator Sanders and others come out and really rally and send a very strong signal that this
Michelle
is
not Obama who we are. And yesterday Al Gore were trying to do just that, just go out and vote.
And President Obama, too, was awesome last night with the sniffing.
Did you see that?
Oh, the sniffing thing?
Oh,
yeah.
My
gosh. Smells like sulfur.
Alec Jones did. Yeah. How can people believe that? Doesn't it worry you that people who believe him are doing the voting that we're talking about?
It worries me what people believe in general.
Sometimes,
as a media member, it scares me a little, and I think there's going to be a lot of thinking that we have to do when this is all over, because sometimes I feel like I write columns that are kind of cynical and sometimes snarky, especially about politicians, right? And it's easy to be that way, but sometimes when that cynicism comes back at you, and it's 1,000 times stronger, and it's just people distrusting everything, you start to wonder,
I meant to ask
maybe
you about
that. We should all take a step back and
but
just kind of...
it didn't happen by accident. It's happened over time, this drumbeat of government's bad and everybody's a liar. And, you know, that's... hasn't it? I mean, this has happened over
I know.
Time.
But we're at the point now, it's gotten so far that you can call another candidate the devil in a presidential debate, and it's acceptable.
And people
acceptable.
Believe it. We're the, Hillary and I are demons, and we smell like sulfur. Sulfur. Ain't that something, the president goes and he...
But we have real challenges in this country that need to be addressed. And these, you know, this is not leadership. This has
Absolutely.
To be... you know, people need to vote against this.
So,
the FBI
so
needs
let me
to
ask,
put him in jail.
So let me
Lock
ask,
him up.
So let me ask two questions. And one is, you know, again, there are 8 billion things to be upset about when you look at this election, I think, and to be legitimately bereft over. The ad that Donald Trump put out yesterday was unbelievable.
Which part?
I didn't see it.
There's about 7 different unbelievable things about it.
On Secretary Clinton's health.
Oh, and her health was oh, yes.
Well, I mean, where they were showing the 30 seconds, and they're showing her
coughing,
and they're showing her helping up on a pair of stairs. They show her falling, you know, with the van. And... I thought, well, this has to be. I mean, I know this election season has been filled with new lows, but really, that was unbelievable.
And don't forget the new slogan that went with that ad at the end. It says, "Donald Trump can protect you. Will protect you. He's the only one who can."
Yes.
Oh my
Which is
gosh.
Kind of chilling if you think about it. I mean, that's such a bizarre concept.
He has consistently maintained that from the convention speech on. He's
and also,
the only one
but
who can save him.
And no inclusion of his running mate.
And nobody else can.
Right.
Which is interesting, too.
Yeah, and there's that new thing on the Breitbart site where it says, us against the world.
Yes,
have you seen this?
Right, yes.
And usually if a campaign's going to take on the us against the world theme, it's usually the candidate with thousands of people behind them, and you know they're storming forward. It's
what
a movement.
We have here?
We have the back
Trump.
Of Trump, and then Trump in the mirror. That's the us. That's the plural there. Trump and Trump. It's bizarre. It's really bizarre.
Right. For a long time, these people have operated in the shadows and on the side. And again, the leadership of the Republican Party has held them at bay. You know, gathered as much votes as they needed to win, but held them at bay. But again, you now have a person at the top of the ticket who's fundamentally unqualified to be president of the United States. And his lack of understanding of the Constitution, of our government, of these issues, is what allows this group to come in and take over.
Can I, Chris, just real quick, can someone explain to me, because I've tried to read as much as I can about this, is how much of the Tea Party movement is the alt-right, or are they separate movements, and what are the overlaps in that?
I think the alt-right has for years been to the right of the Tea Party, but there has been some overlap. And so, but what you saw in the last year is some of the people in the Tea Party becoming so disaffected because the Republican leadership could not deliver on what they'd been on what they'd promised. And so you have a group of people who've been disaffected. They moved over.
Moved over
so that's
right.
why they've right. gained they've gained strength because people are disillusioned because they felt, you know, they're this no compromise.
So
we hate government.
Is Donald Trump the perfect alt-right candidate, or did he just become their vessel?
I believe he was an empty vessel, and they took over his campaign.
The
I believe that's what
fool.
Happens.
Well, because he really didn't have anything.
He doesn't have a core.
But
he believes, and he'll say whatever he needs to say.
Right.
He's a marketing guy. He's ultimately a
yes.
huckster. And he'll say whatever he needs to say at the moment.
But I do think there's been some alt-rightish things about him all along, though. I mean, the birther stuff, the Central Park Five stuff way back. You know, I mean, it's
but
not
the,
like he
but
was...
But the birther stuff, too, came from... That was pretty deliberate. It wasn't because of some great moral...
No, I know that, but
had.
I'm just saying that he's always kind of had this history of playing these kind of racial politics.
Right. Yeah, I think that's it. He played it as a way to get into politics. That's why he went into the whole birther controversy. He doesn't care where Obama's from. He doesn't care if there's an illegitimate president. He would be one.
But you
that
think
was
he
his
really
way to move in.
Cared about the Central Park Five issue, except
no.
for the extent it got him some play,
yeah,
publicity.
Yeah, well, that might be true. That might
I mean,
be true.
All
yeah.
of these issues, right. it seems like he cares about them to the extent that they get him publicity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not grounded in any core set of ideas, and that these folks, they cannot garner a majority on the basis of their ideas. And so what they do is focus on attacking people to build their support, because they cannot get a majority based on their ideas. That this country is not where they are.
But,
again,
but look at what happens after this election is over. Let's go back to that idea. It's one thing that we can pull Trump apart. That's pretty easy, and we've spent a lot of time doing it. But he has up to 40% of the country could vote for him.
Right.
That's a huge chunk of people who believe this, who buy it, who want a strong man who will tell them what to do and, you know, Constitution be damned. What do we do about that? How did it get to this point?
I think it's smaller group than 40%.
I agree.
I think you're talking 20-25%.
Because I think there are people who just are and for a whole host of reasons are just against Hillary and are going to vote for whoever.
Or the Republicans. They've voted Republican
all their
life. They're all along for the ride, and a lot of them are very uncomfortable with it.
And then
but
there
when
are
a pollster
who are
calls,
core.
They say, well, Trump. You know.
Right.
But.
And I also think that Secretary Clinton has already started talking about that. I am the candidate for all
everybody.
The people, mm-hmm. even those who don't vote for me. And she understands that she, you know, there's a really, he has torn at the fabric of our society.
And
there are real deep divides. And she won't be able to govern unless she pulls these people
doesn't.
And this country needs to be pulled back together. And that's going to be one of the big challenges. And while they push hard and will not stop pushing, as you saw with Obama, mm-hmm. President Obama, to try to delegitimize her, as they spent a long time trying to delegitimize him. But that's the challenge after all of this.
All right. The best news is that there's only 27 days left. Oh, God. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll talk more about this. Rosemary and Chris and Teresa will be back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. An especially feisty group this morning. This is very all kinds of fun, and it's Rosemary's birthday. So
yes,
happy birthday, Rosemary! How are you?
Happy birthday to you! Happy birthday to you!
We're on a sugar high.
Yeah,
I promise.
All good. Well, so let us go to a couple of letters about what we've been talking about, and then we'll move on to some other issues, although, as we noted during the break, just other variations of the same issue, I think, yes. But I do want to talk about Paul Ryan and the down ticket races as well. We got this from Sarah, who says, thank you for the substantive discussion on the election. I believe one factor that plays a role is that Americans generally are not very well educated. Do your panelists agree? I always wince at that. I don't like to think of that as a reason, but what do you think?
They're not very involved in the election. And that's a form of education. Informed, I would say, rather than educated. These are not stupid people. I do not think they're stupid, but they have this view that it's all boring, it doesn't matter, they're all the same. We have Ralph Nader to thank for that, a horrible idea. They're not all the same. But that is the perception, and so people stay away. They don't know all the nuances that we sit here going over every day. They neither know about it or care about it.
I think they're very busy in their own lives, and I think that they do care, but they have a lot going on in their lives, and that's why it's important to speak to them in this all this noise. I think that the Trump strategy of trying to dampen down vote is to think that people don't care, but I think ultimately they do care what happens in their lives, and while they are getting their kids ready to go to school, you know, the TV's on in the background, or the radio's on in the background, and they hear things, and they, you know, the sense is who's going to help me. And I think that's one of the sad things in all of this, is that this election has been so void of issues that it's hard for people to really understand who is or isn't going to help them.
I think you're being really nice. I mean, I just have too many Facebook friends who boast. They don't just inform, they boast that they're going to watch the baseball game or whatever game instead of the debate. Or, no, I've never read that stuff anymore, as if it's a point of pride. So I don't think it's just that they're busy. I think that they're turning it off.
Some are turned off. And certainly by what's going on now, they're turned off.
And this devoid of issues thing. I mean, I don't get that. We have talked about, they have talked about billions of issues. And each side said the other isn't specific. But if you look, there's actually a lot of specifics from both sides. It's that that whole issue discussion gets lost in the personality and insane craziness stuff.
Right. Let me correct what I really intended to say is coverage of the issues. That because Trump is who he is, I think that the discussion of the issues, and you saw that at the town meeting,
right.
You know, this of substantive issues. Look at the outpouring of focus for Ken Bone talking about energy, because you know how many really
but should key it be,
issues
if
were discussed.
If you're going to say, well, this is going to be an issues election, and that's really what the focus should be on, well, then wouldn't it really be like a 50-50 race? Because you're going to have half the people who kind of agree with Trump on the Republican side on the issues, and half. I mean, I think the character part is an essential part of this whole thing.
Character is a huge issue in this campaign. But I don't think
issues. The country is roughly half and half divided, or maybe a little bit more to the Democrat side. But I don't think.
I think if Trump had to speak to the issues, he would have never made it through the primaries. He just hasn't enough substantive base grounding in issues.
That's definitely true.
He couldn't answer.
That's why he's flailing in the
He couldn't answer a
debates.
Second or a third question about what's going on in Syria. He could barely answer the first question.
I still am marveling, and I haven't seen much written about it, but he said, Russia's new to nuclear power, and we're all stale, and they're fresh. And what? What
well,
is he talking about?
He doesn't
about?
Understand the issues. I mean, he talks of, you know, what's going on in the minority community and poverty. I mean, NPR had a great story today on poverty.
Right.
He's the only one that didn't provide any answer on what he would do, and his... You know, jobs, but how do you create jobs?
Right. Law and order and jobs.
You know, right. Hasn't been asked that second or third question in the many times that he's interviewed about these issues.
Well, I think he's been asked all these questions.
Oh, he doesn't answer. He doesn't answer.
He doesn't have that capacity to answer.
I guess he's not held accountable for not answering.
And let me point out that was an advantage to him in getting where he is.
Exactly.
So why would he now talk about the issues if he knows it's a weakness and he didn't need it up to now? He's got a perfect strategy. That's not the media. The media has over and over again faulted him for not answering questions. They've made him look bad not answering questions. Questions out of stupidity or lack of knowledge.
I'm not sure that in the primaries so much.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, some of this goes back to what the emailer was saying about, you know, the education of the populace. I like Rosemary, I kind of cringe at this a little bit because you do want to avoid sounding elitist, but sometimes when he describes things and you think it doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he says, you know, Hillary was in the Senate for 8 years. Why didn't she change tax policy?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't work that way. There's no way one senator can do that. But he describes it that way, and I think there is a chunk of people who don't really know how
understand.
It works,
or a president can put her in jail.
Right. Right.
Or change the libel laws.
Right.
Or don't know what that means in historical context and how that's throwing you down, you know, making this country seem like Congo or Nicaragua or places right. where.
I'm also fascinated by every, and I know we talked about this before, but every term that gets thrown toward the Trump campaign by somebody, usually it's the Times or the Post. So they'll use a term like, for example, of what came out of the debate, Trump is going to, you know, if Trump were to win, it would make this a banana republic. And then 24 hours later, he repeats it back and saying Hillary Clinton is going to make our country a banana republic.
Yeah, that's been noted.
I mean that is
whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you. It's a very sophisticated strategy.
It works.
But
again,
it
works for the base, right?
Right.
And he just says it over and over and over again, and you know, it sticks to some people.
Peter says, thinking about Rosemary's comment about FBI investigation, it almost seems investigating cocaine use might be more effective investigation. A simple drug test would tell a lot. This is obviously over
the sniffing
again, which is weird because he doesn't seem to do it when it seems to me more of a nervous twitch. Because he doesn't do it when he's on stage at a rally.
Unless he's talking, sometimes you notice it depending on what he's talking about. It's a nervous twitch. It's a signal that says this is outrageous.
I like the person who said this is an internet thing, so it's not original, but I love it that it's a nervous reaction. He sniffs unconsciously whenever he lies.
Exactly.
Right, like Clarence getting his wings.
If only it was that obvious.
The bell goes.
Yeah, so it would grow a little bit.
I hadn't read that, but it is. Yeah, it's He's a serial liar.
Corey says the federal government is too big. It is involved in way too many areas of American life. It's overwhelming for most people to make sense of it at all. No wonder most Americans are uninterested. It's too difficult to keep it all straight. And with the size and role of the federal government, I think most people feel that either opinions don't matter, or best, or the whole is a scam at worst. So we end up with the choice between a racist empty suit and a criminal career politician.
Oh,
ain't democracy grand?
Again, that equality between the two candidates just makes me crazy. She is not a criminal. She has been investigated repeatedly, and not only has she not been convicted of anything, she's not been charged with any crime.
And in fact, I would argue some of the investigations are criminal.
Thank
and
you. They
a waste
were.
Of taxpayers. Benghazi for the 11th
sixth, seventh,
time.
And eighth
what did that
time,
cost
there were
the
nine
taxpayers?
Of them. Millions.
I mean, she has dedicated 30 years of her life to public service. Now, there are a whole group of people who for a long time, you know, they hate government, they hate public service, they condemn it. But in fact, thank goodness. I mean, we saw that last week with the hurricane. I was thinking about that when, you know, think about all of those people mm-hmm. in government that we depended on in mm-hmm. the midst of that hurricane. You know, people don't think about this, but NOAA, all of the information about the movement of that hurricane comes from government employees, you know, who are willing to fly into the eye of a hurricane. You know, there's all sorts of things that government does that people don't understand, but there's this drumbeat of, I hate government, I hate government, I hate government,
but
it's a problem.
I don't think we should gloss over the fact, though, that Hillary is a very, very flawed candidate.
That's fine.
And there is
How is she flawed?
There's a long pattern of dishonesty.
There is a long, for years, people have said that, but is it true? I mean, what there is a long pattern of public service, of working hard over time.
There's
been
on privacy that has led to charges of being dishonest, but being private is not the same.
Too many scandals to even discuss in an hour-long program, and a lot of times,
and we are still hearing
times,
about them, Chris.
And a lot of times, there isn't as much there as people sometimes think, but a lot of times there's enough there, and there's enough of the secrecy and that kind of the mentality that led to this whole private email server. I mean, if you want to say Trump is a terrible candidate,
but the private email server was litigated. Excuse me for interrupting.
Well, I know, but see, people, when you say,
but there's an,
when you say, oh, but there have been so many investigations and she's been cleared,
and she's been cleared over and over and over.
Yeah, but people don't want to hear that their candidate has been investigated 14 times.
But why is she
investigating her? Well,
because they were afraid of her. They wanted to block the issues. They can't get her on the issues, so they go after personality.
If there was any other Democrat but Hillary Clinton running against Trump,
other Democrat who has the resume and the list of accomplishments that Hillary Clinton has. You know, she dedicated her early life to working for children. She was First Lady. She was Secretary of State. She is New York State Senator.
She has
a whole list of accomplishments.
Okay, and I just want to move on.
But those aren't accomplishments. Those are job titles.
Oh,
you know
what
I'm. Listen,
what I just want to say is that I think, because I agree with Chris to a point, though, but you can take away the fact that throughout the investigations, there has been enough smoke to at least look for a fire, right?
Nine times in Benghazi.
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing with you, that alone, that just Benghazi is but one, and then there's the email server. There are a number of investigations. Look, I agree with you completely. All I'm saying is the point is that if you're looking at a candidate that has had these issues, they are issues, right?
Was there an investigation of Colin Powell's use of emails?
He didn't email classified material.
Neither did
we
she.
Don't.
Yes, she did.
We don't know. No, she didn't.
Yes,
she didn't.
She did.
She did not. It's
yes,
been
she
reclassified.
Did.
The Bush administration lost how many emails are missing from the Bush White
Millions.
House?
Millions.
22
right.
million?
Yes.
Investigation?
Right, but that doesn't clear Hillary. I mean, you can say, well, they're crooked, too, or they did this, too.
I'm
but
not
that
saying
doesn't...
they were crooked. I'm saying that they weren't investigated.
But the point is, when you start saying, oh,
they use investigations for political tools. I'm not saying that
I get
she's
that.
Perfect.
But when you say, the Bush administration did it, too, or other people have done it, too,
no,
then you're playing into
measure,
Trump's hands where it's
measure.
Like, I'm outside that system. I'm the one who's not part of this whole corruption.
I'm saying that rather than argue over policy, the Republicans have chosen litigation as their way to dampen down her effectiveness and Bill Clinton's and Obama's effectiveness.
I don't disagree with much of what you're saying, but I think there is a reason that so much of the public distrusts her and distrusts the Clintons.
I think you've bought the lies, Chris. I think you've drunk the Kool-Aid that if she's been investigated so much by people, by the way.
Let's get Rich Honan on the phone. Can we say that? Yeah.
I think it's not surprising.
But you yourself have it. I'm sorry, Teresa, but you
yourself.
She has
real faults. Okay, you want to talk about her real flaws? She's horrible with the press. The WikiLeaks stuff coming out now shows that when the email scandal broke in the New York Times, and I've said this here repeated times, that was a flawed, error-filled story. And they said, let it go. It's going to blow over in a week. What the heck kind of thinking is that? And this is a woman who spent 30 years in government. It's going to blow over. You got a story in the New York Times and you're running for president. So of course it looks worse. It looks far worse than it really is. And all the stuff that Colin Powell advised it, that, yeah, she could have come out right away and said, whoa, you're right. Let me tell you how we came to this. And I am sorry about it. I'm going to turn everything over. My people will be open to you. There we go. We wouldn't have this now.
I've heard this continually described of her, though, as covering up something that didn't necessarily needed to
be covered
up.
Yeah, that's stupid. Right. That's a flaw.
And George Stephanopoulos said that way back. Yes. He said the biggest mistake they ever made was with the Whitewater investigation, not just giving
everything.
Whitewater led to everything that followed.
Okay, flaw. There's a flaw. But it doesn't work with the public.
But I think
they were
that
cleared
fits
in
exactly
the Whitewater investigation.
Fits into exactly what Chris is saying.
That she's a criminal, which is what Chris said?
No, I didn't say she was a criminal.
You did.
No, I
didn't. Yeah, but you described the other candidate as a serial criminal public servant.
Let's talk about Florida.
No, I didn't. Yeah, the emailer did.
No, the emailer did.
Let's talk about Florida.
Let's take a break.
All the headphones on the table.
Let's
jumping
talk
into my
about
lap.
Florida.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll calm everybody down.
Where's Alan? We need his calm and reasonable voice.
We'll be back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Gloversville Sewing Center, Gloversville, and Saratoga Springs, New York. A quilt shop offering Bernina and Janome sewing machines, GloversvilleSewingCenter.com, were worth the trip. Crown Maple Syrup, Hudson Valley, open every weekend for lunch, maple tours, and an October 15th fall festival with carriage rides, craft vendors, local food and drink, CrownMaple.com. And Bard College's Hannah Arendt Center, presenting the annual fall conference, Real Talk, Difficult Questions About Race, Sex, and Religion, convening October 20th through 21st, 845-758-7878 for more information.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our discussion. I think everybody's calmed down. They're taking a break. They're looking at their phone. They're breathing calmly. Everything's fine. Good morning and welcome back. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois make up our panel, and we are thrilled to have them here. Let's move on to other subjects. But as we mentioned before, probably just variations of the same subject. We do want to talk about Paul Ryan, and because we started out this program by talking that certainly yesterday was a day that Donald Trump took out a lot of his anger out on Paul Ryan for, he feels, leaving him at the altar, if you will. So the question we have is what event, because Paul Ryan has said, all right, I'm going to spend more time in the down ticket. I'm going to spend more time working on the House seats. And from what we hear now, because this race has widened, and depending on what polls you look at, there is now, in some cases, anywhere between a 9 and 16-point spread between the two candidates. So the question then becomes, yes, how much is the House in play? Is the Senate in the bag for the Democrats at this point? And what do we make of of those races, especially when so much of the attention is still on the ticket because of all the yelling and shouting.
I don't know that the House is in play. I think the Senate definitely is, and I think what's interesting is that the guy who's at the top of the ticket doesn't seem to care about any of that. You know, usually the president wants to help the people who are running
who will
down
help
ballot.
Him eventually.
Right, right, and he just. Like we said earlier, it's scorched earth at this time. Everyone's going down except him, where he's going down with everybody, and he's going to bring everybody down with him.
Consistent with his dictatorial tendencies, ask the question, you know, John McCain and Paul Ryan, how should you be elected? How would you ever get them to work with you? And they're your allies. And he goes, don't worry about it. They'll work. They'll come around.
You know,
it's unthought. It's unthought out. It's not politics as usual, which is abhorrent to us, and his base loves it.
And, you know, the Paul Ryan thing is just, to be honest, I don't understand it. You know, we were talking about Breitbart earlier. Breitbart's been going after him for a long time now. There was a poll up before his election. This was a poll. Does Paul Ryan have a soul? Why? I mean... Paul Ryan...
This is a poll on Breitbart.
Poll on Breitbart, yeah. Paul Ryan is a very conservative... I don't know what anybody on the right side of the spectrum, what problem they would have with Paul Ryan, besides the fact that he's been working within the system for the last few years. So when
he compromises and he's not far right enough for them.
But if he's not far right enough for them...
I mean, since he took over, they want someone from the Freedom... Forum, is that what they call it in the House to be the Speaker of the House?
What that is a party moving so far to the right that it becomes unelectable because
compromise in this group.
These are people who
you're getting
like
a smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller group of people who are going to be willing to vote for these candidates. I mean, Paul Ryan is from, I don't know that much about his district, but Wisconsin is a swing state. There's only so conservative he could be before he's going to run into electoral problems.
Yeah.
So if you are, let's go in on the micro on this. So if you're Elise Stefanik, if you're John Faso, you have pledged your allegiance to Donald Trump. What do you do now?
Has Elise Stefanik done that? I'm not sure that she has, actually.
No, what?
Has she said that she's going?
Yes, she has. She stayed with him.
Yeah, okay. Both candidates.
Both of them are staying with
both,
him.
Both candidates.
Well, they're in a rough position because, like we said before, there's that core 20-25%, and then there's the more moderate Republican who might be repulsed by Trump. So
can the race be the race, or will that be the issue of the race?
Will Trump be the issue of the
race?
I don't. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on whether Zephyr Teachout wants to make it the issue of the race. I'm not sure that
well,
she does.
Not so much the individual candidates, but those from the outside that are funding and putting ads into this race certainly are making it.
Right. They're definitely going to try to tie whomever to Trump. No doubt about that.
Do you think the House is really in play?
No.
No. I think the Senate is, but the House, Democrats can't take that over.
Well, I think the key in the House is how many Democratic seats can you pick up?
Right.
And so the more that they can pick up, obviously, the better. Even if they don't take
the majority.
House, even if they don't reach majority, the more that they can chip away and take seats, the better. The situation there, though, is the seats that they will win are the seats where people are more in the middle.
Yep.
And so then the hard right will end up having even more control because those are the ones that'll stick. But I think on these the Faso race, for instance, I think the issue is interesting in that, you know, he's been asked about the tape. But what about the whole other series of issues? You know, and maybe you know this, I don't. Is he held accountable for the range of things that Trump has said, whether it's on Mexicans or whether it's on Lock Her Up or those whole host of issues? Same with Stefanik. Are they being held accountable? You know, as they must be making the calculation, they need to stay with him because they need that chunk of votes to win, that, you know, segment of votes to win, the Trump vote to win.
But are they being held accountable
for all of his issues? I don't know. Do you know?
I don't know if they're being held accountable for it. I'm not sure it's fair to hold them accountable for everything that Trump does either. I mean, I think their strategy has
been... When did fairness get into this?
Well, yeah. there is that. But Well, you know, I mean,
I heard the Teach Out and Faso debate here at the Linda.
Yes,
and he's voting their party line. That's his. And Zephyr Teach Out did not press on that, as probably she should not. There's a whole chunk of Rensselaer County and other rural parts of the state where Trump still would have a lot of support. So she has other ways to go after him. I think than
right.
that.
And Faso doesn't want to talk about it. And I,
of course, and I can understand why.
You know, what about on tax issues? But, on, you know, they with Trump on his tax policies, which are skewed to the 1%. Are they with him on climate change? Are they climate deniers? You know, are they there are a whole series of issues.
Well, unfortunately, we have a whole bunch of weeny top-level Republicans who have given the answer to that, saying, oh, there are many things I disagree with Mr. Trump on, but the Supreme Court didn't support my party, and that's what you usually get. But I think you're wrong to say that it isn't fair to ask someone who is endorsing Donald Trump to explain exactly what it is they are endorsing. What about him do you like? Why is that not fair?
I think a lot of the candidates, including Faso, have made it kind of pretty clear they don't love much about Donald Trump, that their endorsement has been tepid at best.
But it's his agenda when they're in the House. Right.
Well, what choice? I mean,
it's his agenda that they're going to have to carry.
Because they want to win their seat, right? I mean, they, like I said, they have to keep that 25% of people in.
The Allen argument. This is the Allen you're standing in for.
Well, the politicians.
It's real politics. Don't be naive, Chris.
How does any politician get elected? You have to get 50%, right? So you've got to keep the core 25% there. And then try to add the additional 25%.
I mean,
throw away 25%.
Do these candidates think all, you know, it's okay to denigrate a POW, Senator McCain? Do these candidates think that all the generals are stupid?
No, but when McCain himself endorsed
be
Trump,
a good reporter.
Then McCain, no, I mean, McCain gave him him the cover to do that, right? I mean, if the people who are being insulted.
McCain's walked away from him.
Well, now he has, right.
But. McCain's walked
away
from him.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and we'll be back, and we'll talk more about all of this good stuff, and we'll welcome your letters right after this.
Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable, and welcome back to the Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Rosemary Armeo, Chris Churchill, and Teresa Bourgeois, all on our program, and we're very happy to have them all here, and we're happy to have you here as well. Quick talk about the lockbox, because we're doing well, but we need to do better. I'm speaking on behalf of Alan, who is away today because of Yom Kippur, but Alan's scared. So we have $400,000 that we need to get to. We are at $335,572, $335,527. I think I just inverted those numbers, but it's $335,527.17. And we need to get to $400,000 by Monday morning at 6 a.m. to get a $10,000 challenge by Jane Kane. $10,000, and we need it desperately. Now, one thing we mentioned yesterday, and this is cool, we announced that there is a lockbox exclusive, or as we say on our best radio voices, a lockbox exclusive, which is that if for right now, from now until the start of the fund drive, or until supplies last, and I'll get into that part in just a moment, we're going to have a live panel at the Linda the day after Election Day, Wednesday, November 9th. It's going to start at 9. It'll be over at 11. We're going to have breakfast at 8:15. You can come. You can talk to many of the panelists. I'm still working with all of our panelists as to who will be there, but this is how we're saying it. We're going to get as many of the panelists as we can on, as many as we can pack on that stage, we'll pack on the stage. We're going to do it for 2 hours from 9 to 11. It's a $125 pledge. You get a pair of tickets. You get a round table mug. You both get a round table mug, by the way. You get a round table mug. You get continental breakfast. We had pigs in the blanket last time. Little pigs in the blanket. Very lovely. We're very good.
You vegetarian, wouldn't... sorry.
Okay. All right. We have cantaloupe in a blanket. Lovely. Very good.
I'm sure the pigs in the blanket
are very, very
too.
Good.
Blanket of lettuce.
Yeah. By the way, thank you for
more
thinking.
More for you. More for you, Joe.
By the way, thinking that the pig was actually meat. Thank you for thinking that, but we don't really know. Anyway, the roundtable panel is at the Linda, and we'll be doing this live. So if you want to do this, you have to do this now. And this helps the lockbox. So it's $125. You get a pair of tickets. And who knows what's going to happen on Election Day, but we will be there to suss it all out. And now out of we had 100 pairs yesterday. So a third are already gone. 35 pairs already gone. So that's a lot of people. Already we've got a nice crowd, but we want to sell it out. That's only for one day, so if we could sell it out, that would be fantastic. And all you have to do is go to WAMC.org, or you can go to 1-800-323-9262, press 0, and someone will take your call. By the way, I just want to mention, yes, the important part here is that we get to the $400,000 and that we get the challenge from Jane Kane, $10,000. So please, please, please do what you can. This is a crucial election, and there is a lot of coverage. We're going to be on the air raising money till we make the money. But you determine how long we'll be on the air. So the more money we make up front, the less we have to actually interrupt the programming, including this panel, including the news, including Morning Edition, and all things considered. So just keep that in mind. We want to make this a really, really, really fast, fun drive. WAMC.org. Okay, now let's get to a lot of letters and some that I'm just going to breeze through here. And anybody who has any comments, please, we welcome you to make those. Chris is arguing that where there is smoke, there must be fire. Sometimes when there's smoke, it's because there are so many Republicans blowing smoke. Lou says the House Republicans managed to gerrymander their districts in 2010, and now they are pigeonholing themselves. The rabid Trumpsters in their districts are threatening to not support the Congress people that dropped Trump, just rewards the rigging the system remark. We got this from Lars, who says, I am a man, and it seems clear to me that if Hillary were male, she would be seen as the most qualified candidate ever, period. All her flaws would be seen as positive. She would be labeled bold, tireless, and extremely intelligent instead of pushy, tired, and Hermione-like. Let's get over our sexism. There has never been a more qualified candidate. Let's. It's her in with record numbers. All right. We go to Henry, who says, good discussion today, but there's too much talking over each other's points. Difficult to listen to anyone's argument.
That's my fault talking over you, and I apologize.
You're doing it again right now.
I know. I can't help it. I'm Italian.
On the emails, I have often wondered why didn't any of the lifetime employees of the State Department raise a concern about sending alleged classified materials. If I was an employee and I needed to send classified materials to a non-government email, I would be asking questions. But would you ask questions of the boss?
Yeah, that's...
Well, okay. Generals, I'm guessing. Generals send her emails. I'm guessing national security folks send her emails. Lots of people send her emails. They knew it wasn't a .gov address, email address. They knew they were sending to not a .gov email address.
Yeah, okay, but she's the boss. She's the boss, right? I mean,
no, these aren't employees. I'm talking about other people who are not her employee. Yeah. If this was so such a concern for national security, there were a whole range of people who communicated with her who used that method. And why would this, if it was that serious? I'm not saying that it's not an issue. I'm not saying that, you know, people learned more and more greater understanding about use of emails, and the systems got tighter and tighter in terms of security over time.
Here's the one rule, though. If it's on a .gov site, it's open to reporter scrutiny, and it is wrong that she evaded that. I don't think she sent any messages that were a problem. I think we would have more than heard about it by now if that were true. I think all of that is made up, but she did evade Freedom of Information requirements.
She did send classified material over that email server. That's just a fact that came out in the Comey investigation. And he said that she was extremely reckless or careless or whatever word. You can debate, and I think...
Nothing.
Listen, with everything that's going on in this election, I don't think this is
right.
That
Let's
big
talk.
A deal. But you can't just, you know, it is a blemish on her record. There's no way around that.
She has apologized for it. She said it was.
Well, that's great, but you can apologize for it, but it's still going to be a blemish on her record.
And
Trump is right when he says that all those emails, the 30,000 emails, were deleted after the subpoena arrived. That's another blemish on her record.
And how did that happen?
It doesn't matter how it happened. It happened.
To the listeners, want to explain to the listeners how that happened?
You're talking about the employee who supposedly did it on his own? Yeah. Okay. But that requires that you believe that this employee did it on his own without talking to Hillary first. And you may believe it, but somebody else is just as justified not to believe it.
Why don't we just agree to disagree and listen to what the other...
Donna says, I feel like I was listening to Fox News this morning. I forget the names of the two women on the show, but they are inexcusably rude to Chris.
Woohoo!
He was interrupted repeatedly while trying to make his points.
And not only that, but I'm going to grab his...
Oh, stop it. Rosemary, if it wasn't your birthday.
I'm going to human resources right now. Is there a human resource?
The number of times one is investigated is an artifact of who is in power. If others do things for which they are not investigated, then you can't use the number of times a particular person has been investigated as a basis for suspicion. Where there's smoke, there's fire. And...
I want to see empirical proof of that, where there's smoke, there's fire. That's just not true. What we're seeing is a constant branding and marketing of Hillary Clinton in a negative light. That's what we're seeing. It isn't smoke and fire and all that stuff. It's Donald Trump going crooked Hillary.
You know it's more than that. You know she has her flaws.
I think you just talked over me.
I did, yeah. I thought you were ending.
You're being incredibly rude to me.
Miguel says that Chris has been pushing this flawed Canada viewpoint since the Democratic primary last year. Please let it go and move on, sir.
If you're going to say that Hillary has no flaws, then fine. But she
has
flaws. Everybody has flaws. And there are problems with Hillary. Listen, if any other Democrat was running against Trump, it would be such a blowout. But
wrong.
That's not true.
Bernie, for example, we'd be hearing about how he's a Jewish atheist, a socialist,
a
communist.
About the
second
most unpopular presidential candidate we've ever had, and it just so happens that she's running against the most unpopular presidential candidate we've ever had. But she didn't get that unpopular just overnight. I mean, and she deserves some
blame
for that.
She did, actually, Chris. When she left, she had a 60% popularity figure when she left. You cannot dismiss the fact that she is unpopular in part because she's a woman, and we do not like ambitious, strong women in this country. I'm sorry, it's just there.
There is some sexism behind.
Thank you for acknowledging
some of the dislike of her. But it's not all of it. I don't believe that it's all.
There also has been a year of false equivalency, where I think that people think, well, you know, if they say something about Trump, they have to say something about her. But what is there anything else that the reader?
No, I'm going to let you talk about Florida. You've been wanting to talk about Florida.
Yes, we need to hear her talk about Florida.
Yes.
Go, Teresa.
So your thoughts on Florida.
Well, I think I wanted to talk about Al Gore being in Florida yesterday.
Al Gore campaigned with Hillary Clinton yesterday. I did see it. He seemed a little rusty maybe, but he was...
It was pretty compelling. Believe me, your vote counts.
That was a good line.
Well, I think it's a very important reminder that every vote does count. I mean, I think that's the reason why I wanted to talk about Florida. You have Trump down in Florida three times in the last week, so obviously they're concerned about Florida. And I think it is an important swing state. And I think that the message that Al Gore sent yesterday was a critical one, that every vote does count. And I think even if people this year think, oh, she's going to win, I don't need to vote, I think that for those who care about these issues, they need to send a very, very, very strong message that this is not who we are as a country. And to the extent that he can get millennials to vote, and I also think that the issues like climate change have not been discussed in this campaign, and I think that there's a very stark difference between the two of them on the issue of climate change. He's a climate denier. I think we need to have people in the White House who have respect for science, which Trump doesn't seem to have respect for science. We saw the value of one of the things that President Obama has done in the last 8 years is elevate the importance of science in this country. And okay, I'm going to get a little wonky, but this is what drives innovation. And if you want to talk about how to create jobs, you have to invest in science. You have to invest in innovation. You have to invest in research.
Well, it's like you worked for RPI or something.
I'm sorry. No. I believe this before I worked for RPI.
Listen, that all sounds lovely and all, but we all know climate change is a Chinese hoax.
I mean,
Is that Kool-Aid you're drinking?
Let's just boil it down to the difference is stark.
But also, you know, you have some people doing some interesting things. There's this guy, Steyer, I can never get his name right, but on the he's funding a whole effort, building a huge base of people who, and mostly millennials, the Get Out the Vote effort that's very, very sophisticated, using calling and texting and doing a very sophisticated effort to try to engage particularly young people on this issue.
We talked about what we need to do after the election is over, and I believe strongly that one of those things is to reform and update our voting. It should be, registration should be easier, voting should be easier, should be an online component. And that's something worth getting involved in a movement for. I think this guy is part of that.
I want to read three emails right in a row. Happy birthday, Smart Rosemary. Love your insight, energy, and passion. Good morning, panel. Please keep inviting Chris. He's amazing. Great job. From Jeff. And then Judy says that Teresa is a wonderful addition. She is very articulate, very smart, and I love hearing her thoughts. Please keep her on the panel. So you are all getting very nice mail this morning.
Nothing about you, Joe?
Those are cherry picked.
I wonder what that means. Those and
you weeded through all the negative ones to find
somebody
them.
Write in about how great Joe is he can read it.
Thanks.
All right, what about David Ortiz?
Okay.
We've taken over the agenda today. We have 15 seconds, so we're done.
Shout out to Big Poppy.
Okay.
Yeah. Job well done.
There you go. We'll end it there. Thank you all. We'll be back tomorrow. Rosemary and Chris and Teresa, you're all wonderful.
And you're awesome,
thank
too,
you
Joe.
Very much. You're listening to the Roundtable.
Somebody write
WAMC.
In about Joe.